It's the footballiest time of the year.
Happy football, everybody. Make sure you check out the new episode of the Dave Damashek Football Program. Maurice Jones-Drew, Ike Taylor, and I are breaking down week one. Best wins, Patriots, Steelers, etc. Worst losses, Rams, Jets, etc. Ike offers up some advice for Josh Norman, Darrell Revis and company, and Maurice and Ike both are breaking down Colin Kaepernick's protest. Great stuff coming up for you on the Dave Damashek Football Program. Check it out on iTunes or NFL.com/podcasts.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky, and we have week one of the NFL season in the books. A couple Monday nighters. Well, I'd say one Monday night game and another scrimmage. Between the Niners and the Rams. That was not pretty, Buck. But overall, a great week one of football action. We had a college football slate that didn't look that sexy on paper, but we got a wild finish there in Stillwater, Oklahoma. Some other interesting developments there. We'll touch on the college stuff on the back end of today's audio podcast. But up front, just overall first impressions from the first week of the season.
First week of the season, I was really impressed with the quarterback play. I was surprised that in a league where we talk about there being a quarterback epidemic, not having franchise quarterbacks, we saw a lot of guys put up big numbers. We saw really positives in the touchdown to interception ratio, and we saw a lot of receivers go over 100 yards, 11 100-yard receivers. I continue to maintain that wideouts are now the biggest playmakers on offense outside the quarterback. Is beginning to kind of play out because everyone is featuring the pass game to make everything happen instead of the run game.
All right, I want to hit you with this. Tell me what you think. I mean, especially with J.J. Watt coming off the back, Antonio Brown's the best player in the NFL.
Antonio Brown is a monster, and I do believe he is the best player in the game right now. I think he's unstoppable. If you look at what he's been able to do with all the attention around him, he continues to get open. He continues to deliver big plays, and it doesn't matter who you put opposite him. He finds a way to get it done. The way the Pittsburgh Steelers are playing on offense with Big Ben leaning on AB, it's unbelievable that people can't slow that offense down, but it's also the supporting cast around him. We've seen D'Angelo Williams go for 100 yards. We've seen some of these young pass catchers, Sammy Coates, catch balls over the middle, Jesse James making plays. Pittsburgh Steelers' offense is scary. And when they get Le'Veon Bell back, ooh-wee.
Well, Bucky, I agree with you. This is a scary football team there in Pittsburgh, but – inside that division, it looks like maybe we're kind of going back a few years ago where Baltimore looked better defensively, kind of got all their guys back, did a nice job against Buffalo, holding them to a touchdown. And then you got Cincinnati, maybe the most impressive win outside of the Patriots. Cincinnati going to the Jets and find a way to win that ballgame.
Very impressive effort by the Cincinnati Bengals. They didn't have their A game. They were missing a couple of players. Obviously, Vontaze Burfict was sitting out due to that suspension, but they found a way to get it done. Offensively, they're not as dynamic or as tricky as they were under Hugh Jackson, but they were very, very effective. I like how Andy Dalton played. He pushed the ball down the field. He continued to play at a very, very efficient rate. And as A.J. Green gets more help from his buddies on the outside, namely Brandon LaFell, Tyler Boyd, he will continue to dominate, but what we saw, he's a one-man gang. He can carry them if he needs to on offense.
We're going to get Eifert back at some point in time, too. Now, you're looking at the Steelers with a big win without Le'Veon Bell. You look at the Bengals. You mentioned Burfict, no Eifert. I mean, these teams are only going to get better as the season goes along here. And then the Ravens did a nice job as well. Browns, not so much. But let's jump to that game because that was one we wanted to keep an eye on to see just how Carson Wentz was going to do. I don't know if you could have a better day than the rookie did there in Philadelphia.
You know, we always have loved the talent. Like, from the middle of last season, we proclaimed him to be a very, very intriguing player. He's a guy that has outstanding size, outstanding athleticism, big-time arm talent. And from a work ethic standpoint, he has all the things that you look for in a franchise quarterback. And what we saw, if you had an opportunity to look at some of the pregame stuff and you see him coming out, the study, the detail that he put in his preparation, and then the way that he played – man, if I'm a Philadelphia Eagles fan, I am very encouraged by the debut because I think they got one. I think they have a franchise quarterback for a long time.
And I thought the question with them, too, was who is he going to throw the ball to receiver-wise? Jordan Matthews dropped a ball or two, but still made some nice plays underneath in traffic. Ertz, I know, got dinged up, but he made a couple plays for him. And then Nelson Agholor, it was nice to see him in his second year start to show some progress there, got on top of Joe Hayden, got himself six.
Yeah, I mean, what I was very impressed about, not only like Carson Wentz and the guys stepping up to make plays, I thought Doug Peterson and Frank Reich, those guys had a nice plan. Did a great job of working inside out, as we talk about, working the tight ends, Celek and Ertz. I think their ability to command some attention helped Aguilar and Jordan Matthews get open. And it was very systematic. They took care of the ball. They did some things. They dink and dunk. And Jim Schwartz did a really good job with that defense.
Yeah, their defense up front and led by Fletcher Cox and company. Quite impressive, but I touched on it. The most impressive win of the weekend, I think you got to go Jimmy Garoppolo and the Patriots without Gronk and a couple tackles and no Tom Brady, no worries.
It's hard to go against Bill Belichick now. It's just hard to do it because we've seen them repeatedly, no matter who is the quarterback, no matter what pieces they're missing, what pieces are jettisoned in the offseason, they find a way to continue to win games. He is a master game planner, does a great job of finding ways to really put his players in a position to make strengths while also minimizing what the opponent wants to do. The fact that they were able to take away the deep ball from Carson Palmer and force him to play kind of small ball says a lot about their ability to craft a game plan to really exploit your vulnerability.
Although I will say this, I know they lost a football game, but I tweeted out, I want to be Larry Fitzgerald when I grow up. That dude is still so strong, and the way he's able to catch the football. There was one where he didn't get his head around, and the ball was on him, and he still caught it.
So many plays. You talk about the over. We were talking on the phone. He made the over-the-shoulder catch in the end zone. That is remarkable, the way he's able to get his feet down, control his body, contort his body. It just goes to show you that wide receivers can come in so many different styles that you can find a way to get them done. He's not a guy that necessarily runs particularly fast, but his awareness, his body control, his subtle athleticism allows him to be a playmaker. And I don't know if you can find a guy with better hands than Larry Fitzgerald.
No, it's ridiculous. The Houston Texans went back and watched all their third down or just their pass rush. So when you look at what they do, and they move guys around, but there's some snaps where you'll have Clowney and Watt at ends, and they'll use Merciless kind of as a looper. And then there's other times where they put, which I like the best, is when they put Merciless on one side and they line up Watt inside of JJ, inside of Clowney. They're side by side, which kind of reminds me of what the Niners used to do with Alden and Justin Smith.
Yep.
And Watt's not all the way back yet. You know, his back, you can tell he doesn't have all that snap in him right now. That'll come back. But man, this team with the weapons they have, Lamar Miller, I think one of two running backs over 100 yards. D'Angelo Williams, the only other guy. But the weapons they have in the backfield, and now with Fuller to complement Hopkins, they're built to get a lead, Bucky, and they're definitely built defensively to play with one.
They are built to play with one, and I think that was the biggest challenge when you look at the Houston Texans and I won't say the underperformance of Jadeveon Clowney, but his unavailability due to the injury. When they took him, we were like, man, they could have a formidable front seven, a dominant front seven for a long time to come, and we're beginning to kind of see that even though J.J. Watt isn't healthy, Jadeveon Clowney playing alongside Watt and then having Merciless on the other side, it's a handful because how do you slide your protection to protect against one of those guys? And if you do, someone's going to have a one-on-one.
John Simon got free. They were worried about those dudes, and John Simon came looping around
good enough,
wide open.
They're good enough to create problems for your offensive attack without having to really blitz. I just like what they have at Romeo Crennel's disposal. And you talk about that offense. That offense is going to be terrific. But defensively, they have a championship-caliber defense already in place.
Alex Smith, I was watching that game with the Chargers, and I know you've touched on this. We both gave him big grades coming out. I know. I think you were even stronger on him than I was.
I had a bottom.
Are we selling?
A bottom of the first round grade on him.
Are we selling him short?
I think so because I think stylistically people want to buy into the narrative that your franchise quarterback has to have the biggest arm. He has to make these wild gunslinger plays, and that's not necessarily the case. What I want is a smart quarterback, a guy that makes great decisions, a guy that has some athleticism to work his way out of trouble, but he wins games. And if you've seen Alex Smith since the final year in San Francisco when he was with Jim Harbaugh to coming over to Kansas City, all he's been able to do is win games. And he does it in a way that is, I don't want to say it's non-spectacular, but it's just, he just kind of is the mailman. He distributes the ball, allows his playmakers to work, but he's also a much better athlete than people give him credit for. The fact that he ran the speed option at the end,
nice.
A lot of people have not really appreciated what he was at Utah in terms of being a spread offense quarterback under Urban Meyer.
Yeah.
He ran the ball, I won't say his senior year, his final year at Utah. He had maybe 700 yards rushing. He's a much better athlete than people give him credit for. Andy Reid and his staff have done a great job of utilizing his mobility and his athleticism by doing some things that are very comfortable for Alex from his time at Utah.
No, he did a phenomenal job in that football game, and we'll see when they get Houston back. You know, eventually this defense, I think you'll see them take a step up. The crushing news from the weekend, though, our guy, Keenan Allen. I mean, this is just brutal. He was off to a great start. Phillip Rivers, clear number one guy, and just got a new contract, and unfortunately we lose him to an ACL week one.
It's unfortunate because he was really coming to his own. Coming off the injury last year, we were excited to see him get back, see how he and Phillip Rivers continue to develop that continuity and chemistry that has really made this a nice pass-catching combo or tandem. What I hurt for is the fact that Keenan Allen was not necessarily a fast guy ahead of time. How is he going to recover, and can he change his body enough to be able to still dominate while still being maybe a speed-deficient player? The one thing we know, he's going to work at it. He left a nice message on Facebook and Instagram about coming back and bouncing back from those obstacles and adversity. I think he will eventually be fine, but, man, the Chargers miss a dominant receiver on the edge.
You know, we always say in scouting, or at least I always have, I don't know if you're with me on this, but I always say no matter what you give a player grade-wise, when you're evaluating them coming out of college, eventually – you'll see that player. Now he might you know just show up a little bit and say you give a player a huge grade and you know he doesn't end up being that player. Well, there'll be a flash. You'll see a flash of what you saw in college eventually. And I'm watching that game with the Rams and the 49ers, Buck, and I harken back to my Case Keenum scouting report. I thought he's a practice squad quarterback that eventually could be a serviceable backup with you know a lot of development, but he's going to be a clipboard holder. And you watched that game last night. Okay, that didn't look like an NFL starting quarterback. That didn't look like an NFL quarterback.
No, it didn't. And a lot of times, you know, DJ, people like to take us a task because how can you miss? And I wrote a piece last Friday in my notebook about this, the undrafted free agents. And we're seeing that there are just as many undrafted free agents in the league as there are first and second round picks. But I will say this, and there are some misevaluations, and we do miss on players from time to time. But a lot of times there's a reason why a guy's an undrafted free agent just from a talent perspective. And so when you look at Case Keenum, and even if you look at some of the late round picks that are playing quarterback and starting games, with the exception of Tom Brady and those things, a lot of those guys are kind of our mid to lower level starting quarterbacks. And part of that is because they have some kind of deficiency physically that prevents them from doing it. If you had the opportunity to stand behind Case Keenum, he's a smaller guy. He doesn't have a big arm. For him to be successful over a sustained period of time, he has to be extraordinary with his timing, touch, and anticipation, and I just don't know if he has it to be that guy week in, week out against elite defense.
I'm torn on the Goff thing because, I mean, you watched Case Keenum go, I don't care how bad Jared Goff looked. I've seen him play at a higher level. Like, he's got to be better than this. Just throw him out there. And then the other side of it is, man, this offensive line is so bad. Jared Goff might get killed back there right now.
He may get – and, you know, I think one of the things that that we're missing in the Rams' offense evaluation, Greg Robinson, man, I think, man, we missed
him. I know. Yeah. I gave him a big old grade.
No, we missed on him only because, like, he was a road grader and it looked really good in Auburn's offense, but he doesn't have the footwork and the athleticism to be able to hold up. And so this is number two pick in the draft, someone that you're talking about is going to be a franchise left tackle. And I know we have missed on – those offensive tackles the last couple of years at the top of the board, but he is a miss, and part of his inability to hold up his own end of the bargain affects the quarterback and why the quarterback isn't able to play, even though we know that Case Keenum is kind of marginalized in terms of what he can do.
So you you all in on Blaine Gabbert?
No.
I tweeted out a picture. Did you see I tweeted out a picture of Rick Vaughn from Major League, the Wild Thing? Because we just talked about it in the preseason game where they tried to scheme him up so many layups early in that game. They did it again tonight, and he skipped a couple balls out on wide-out screens. I'm like, what are you doing?
Oh, yeah, but then you saw they padded his stats at the end of the game. Like, they kind of got him going, so stat line looked pretty good. He had a nice couple throws.
That four-minute offense, it was air raid. The air raid offense.
Yeah, Quentin Patton getting the ball on the outside. But, no, Blaine Gabbert is what Blaine Gabbert is. Like, I think he's an intriguing prospect in terms of what he brings to the table, like height, weight, speed, size, arm talent. But I just don't know if consistently over the long haul he can be good enough for you to play winning football. We'll see. San Francisco is certainly going to give him every opportunity in Chip Kelly's offense.
One dude that jumped out when I went back and watched tape of these games, Bucky, Jason Pierre-Paul.
Woo! Got him back.
He's back now.
Got him back. You notice what they did? They kind of moved him. They moved him to left defensive end.
Oh, Doug Free didn't want – he got sick of seeing him now.
Yeah, they put him, which I think is a brilliant move twofold. By putting him at left defensive end, you allow him to work against right tackles. Right tackles traditionally are the weaker offensive tackle. You have to help them a lot. If you don't help them a lot, they can be vulnerable and susceptible against a really quality pass rusher. And Jason Pierre-Paul has figured out how to work around his deficiencies with his hand. And so he's giving people problems. And if you run away from him, you're running right into
Olivier Vernon's strong point of attack.
And so the New York Giants have done a nice job of assembling pieces. We'll see if they can maintain it. But what I saw from that defense was very, very impressive to me.
All right, Buck, I'll hit you with my question. This is my Ask 5 question. I do that Ask 5 article every week for college, and sometimes I like to try and mix it together with the college and the NFL. So my question to the 5 NFL executive was, better player, Dalvin Cook at Florida State right now, Dalvin Cook or Ezekiel Elliott?
Ooh.
What you think?
That's a tough one. I would take Ezekiel Elliott still. I'm still basing that largely off of what he was able to do in college at Ohio State, the physicality and toughness. But, I mean, I can make that argument. I can look at the stat line and say that Dalvin Cook was just as productive and just as effective. He's a little slippery. He has some things. Against Charleston Southern, I was required to grade him. He didn't get much. He had a little work. He had a nice little run. But he has a touchdown run, a 37-yard touchdown run on an ISO to the left where he kind of loses his balance, puts his hand in the ground, in the hole, pops up, wiggles, comes out of it, snaps back. Now, I know, look, Charleston Southern, they don't have enough quality guys to really make that, but just the way that he went through that, I was like, man, that's a big-time talent. So you're close, but I would take Ezekiel Elliott in that.
Yeah, I would take Elliott too, but I think I ended up getting 3 votes for Dalvin Cook.
So. Wow.
Something to get excited about for next year's draft. We're going to have a bunch of these running backs.
A bunch of the running backs are intriguing, and it would just be interesting because I'm still looking for the quarterback that's going to drive the bus. And maybe your guy is going to be the guy, Deshaun Kizer. But right now, I can absolutely see the thought process behind the Philadelphia Eagles and even the L.A. Rams saying, we're going to get to the top of the board. We're going to take a quarterback this year. Because DJ, I don't know if there's a quarterback in next year's draft.
It could be 2018. You got to hold out hope for Josh Rosen, and now it looks like Lamar Jackson.
I'm still not like ready to throw away Deshaun Kizer, Deshaun Watson, or those other guys. But in terms of from a buzz standpoint, like feeling like okay, there's my guy. I don't know if it's a situation where that dude that we all can universally say, okay, that's first-round quarterback.
Yeah.
I don't know if we have that yet.
No, it's a good point. Let's get one more NFL thing, and then we'll switch over here to college. But I thought one of the more interesting games – actually, 2 more games. Your quick take on Stafford and this Calvin Johnson-less offense for the Detroit Lions getting a win over Andrew Luck and company. And then the second one would be Russell Wilson on a gimpy ankle, just kind of pulling out another miracle up there.
Matthew Stafford benefits from the fact that Calvin Johnson is no longer there.
So you think you're in the camp of it's a good thing?
It sounds crazy, but I will go back to my time in Green Bay. Brett Favre had Sterling Sharp the first couple years that he was the starting quarterback. And so everything, when in doubt, he threw to 84. And when you removed 84, it forced Brett Favre to use other parts of the offense, and that took his game to another level. With Matthew Stafford, without Calvin Johnson, he's now having to use all the pieces of the puzzle. You hear quarterback gurus talk about you have to exhaust the play, meaning first, second, third option of the progression, even the check down. What I'm seeing from Detroit and Matthew Stafford is he's using all of those things. I also noticed when I looked not only at the film but the stat sheet, Theo Reddick had 4 or 5 receptions. Amir Abdullah had 5 or 6 receptions.
Eric Ebron had 5.
So when you have that many receptions going to what I call those check down guys, is saying to me that he's avoiding pushing the ball up the field and he's playing small ball. And in the National Football League, small ball is ultimately what wins because you complete a high percentage of your passes, you stay ahead of the chains, and you're able to always keep your team in manageable situations. Matthew Stafford's been outstanding doing that the last 9 games that he's played.
Did you see him jump his dude?
I did. I didn't really like that, But I understood it.
With a little headbutt.
But he has to be careful now. He has to be careful with that.
A little headbutt in there.
Yeah.
But you know what that moment was for me? Is even though you can say you're the leader of the team and you're the quarterback and all that,
yeah,
the best player on the team is somewhat your leader.
Yes.
And Calvin Johnson for so long has been the best player on that offense. Now, he wasn't vocal, but he was identified. I don't know how much of a strong leadership hold you can take if you're Matthew Stafford when you're not the best guy on the offense. Now, that moment was, I'm the captain. I'm the captain now. That was his whole moment.
I can see that because I don't know if I've ever seen him do that, be that demonstrative in a leadership way. I do believe it. Maybe that was kind of the official owning of the seat that's on the chest. And I'm the captain. I'm going to run the show. I'm in charge. It's now a quarterback-driven team. So, yeah, maybe that's the moment. But it's big for him because the fact that they got the win. Because it's funny. 2 years ago, the Detroit Lions were pretty good, pretty mm-hmm. good team. Last year, they fell back to the pack. I think we kind of forgotten about them. But when I looked at them defensively, they played pretty good. And then on offense, Marvin Jones, Golden Tate, not as sexy as Calvin Johnson, but they're very, very productive.
Now, one thing I will say, the Colts are missing everybody. I think on that last drive, they were down to 7 starters. We had a bunch of dudes not dress up for this game. So the Colts aren't going to be that great defensively anyways, but they were – really bad.
But even with that, yep. Even when they have a full gamut of players, the one thing that they've missed on, they don't have a pass rusher.
No, they I will agree with you. They have no pass rusher, but I think the secondary getting Vontae Davis back in company, T.J. Green, the rookie from Clemson.
I like T.J. I think T.J.
Safety,
left
the other
game.
Safety from Central Florida, Gathers.
Yeah, they have
a little box safety.
Yeah, they have Pops. Older player, Mike Adams, still playing.
So they're missing some dudes. But, you know, hey, and on the other side, I thought Andrew Luck looked great. He's 4 touchdowns, and they're going to score a bunch of points. All right, let's go to Seattle. I mean, Russell Wilson.
Does what Russell Wilson does.
Was there ever – do you have any doubt at all?
I mean, no, I felt like, particularly at home, that they were going to find a way to win the game. Pretty impressive with Doug Baldwin, still continuing to be the number one receiver. Seattle's offense always traditionally starts out slow first half of the season until they find their identity and find their way. Defense continues to play lights out. I mean, you hold teams 10 points.
Although Kenny Sills, man, how do you drop that ball?
Huge drop. And I knew it was a huge drop because you don't get many opportunities to dial it up. You dial it up perfectly. You hit the guy in the hands, and he just dropped it. Yeah. I mean, the weird thing is when you see him drop it, he watched it all the way into his hands, and just for whatever reason, he flubbed it. But that was a huge one because you don't get that one back. I will say, very impressed with the Dolphins' defense. Vance Joseph did a good job of getting that front four involved. If they can get that continued effort from their defense, they'll win some games.
I'm with you on that. All right, let's change gears here. Sully, behind the glass, you have our updated standings. I thought I had a great week picking these college football games, and then you guys sent out the update, and I guess it wasn't as good as I thought it was.
You're still taking up the rear here at 12-8. Yeah. Ouch.
There's a lot of heart. There's a lot of heart in some of these picks.
Oh, a lot of heart. A lot of heart. So
what did I go this week? 7-3?
You went 7-3. Step up from last week.
Well, I'm not checking these, by the way. So this is like Price Waterhouse.
Yeah, yeah. Come on now. Come on now.
No.
Yeah, so you went 7-3. Bucky went 7-3. And I went 9-1.
Look at you.
Yeah, that was pretty nice.
Who'd you miss?
I called the Texas Tech upset over Arizona State in that shootout.
You picked Arizona State.
I picked Tech.
Oh, you picked Texas.
Yeah. I picked Tech. So
I still scored again, I think.
But. Yeah. Still
seriously,
went it up.
Good Holy night. Smokes, that was classic Big 12, Pac 12 right there. No defense.
No defense.
Flag football game.
Right.
Buck, biggest takeaway from the college football weekend, other than the Oklahoma State call getting kind of screwed up there at the end. Oh, that was sweet though.
Yeah, it was a sweet play.
Short, nice awareness.
Nice play, able to get it done. The biggest takeaway.
Georgia almost lost to Nichols, man.
I mean,
Clemson messed around with Troy.
It was a great slate of games.
Oh, TCU Arkansas was probably the game. Was the story of the
very good had. Game. Kenny Hill had a nice game. Had a boneheaded mistake with the. Touchdown celebration. No,
it was the Christ the King.
Came at the cost. But your guy stood out to me in the Arkansas game. Sprinkle.
That's my dude, the tight end.
Sprinkle's cupcakes.
Yeah,
did a great
nice.
Job catching the ball over the middle
What's
of the
in the water in Fayetteville after Hunter Henry?
Then I got Sprinkle. I told you that, right? When I watched him, I thought it was.
And I want to say also, Bielma has a history. Maybe he has 7 NFL tight ends that have worked up under him. Wisconsin. That's on NFL roster. So he does a great job with that. But Sprinkle is
sprinkle
the guy.
Sprinkle a little love on him. There you go. We'll get into all previewing all the games on Thursday. On Thursday's audio episode, we will look forward to the NFL weekend as well as the college football weekend.
And feel free to plug your articles. You're doing some hard work for College Football 24/7.
Yeah, we got CFB 24/7. Yeah. We've got a preview of the upcoming weekend with our Move the Sticks notebook, which is new this year, Buck.
Yeah, notebook, a little compilation piece where DJ and I kind of come up with our nuggets. We talk to some people. We put it all together to give you the latest and greatest on what's going on, the buzz, the people that – we have our own, but also the guys at the scouting world is paying close attention to. So you need to check that out on NFL.com as well.
And we also will have – we'll grade the big
five. Grade a big five.
Yeah. So it's – hopefully they start getting some better opponents because I got to be honest with you. Spending my Sunday morning before the NFL games start watching the tape, I had downloaded the game to watch the Clemson-Troy game. It was not my idea of a fun Sunday morning. But we'll get some better matchups. We got some big games on the horizon.
We got some big games, really big games this weekend. We'll talk about those. But, yeah, I'm excited to see some of these young quarterbacks go up against each other.
All right. Well, before we leave here, Bucky, give me a week. Jared Goff is under center for the Rams. Week 3. You don't want to trot him out against Seattle week 2. Sully, who do they have week 3? Give us some work back there. We haven't given Sully any homework, by the way.
We need to do something. I heard this on the radio. I heard this on the radio coming in today. We'll get.
Yeah, and I think we're still TBD on my homework assignment last week. We're working on.
Oh, you didn't get them.
I'm giving another.
All the Bobby moves. Humphrey.
That was 2 weeks ago. Actually, I currently have a failing grade. I know it's terrible.
So
it's at Bucks week 3.
Yeah, Jacquees Smith is out for the year. That's a tough loss for Tampa. But you could try him out on the road against Tampa.
Vernon, a couple of rookies.
Yeah, I mean, any of those division games, no bueno.
No.
I think you tried them out then because I wonder who did they play week 4?
Bills. Oof. Or Cardinals, excuse me. So it goes Cardinals-Bills, so no help there. Then Lions.
How long can you keep him out, though?
I don't know how long you keep
him out. I'll tell you what I'm doing.
Do you throw him to the Lions?
No. Well, after that? I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm going to go up to Corvallis, Oregon, and I'm going to grab my Sean Mannion, and I'm going to fire him in the offense. He'd be starting for me week 2.
Oh, really?
I know what Case Keenum is. Sean Mannion looked pretty good in the
preseason.
Here's
the dilemma.
Throw him out there and see what he does.
They're stuck with because they really went hard on Case Keenum. They sold him hard. They sold him to, he can be a starting quarterback. Everybody that I talked to in the building said, no, we feel like we can win with him. He's a baller. But now you look at it, and, that was an ugly performance. But now that you look at it, like,
can he score the Rams' first points?
We need to see. This is we talked about getting the movie drops to have on the podcast.
Right. That was the homework that we're still.
So you haven't.
I worked on it. I looked into it.
Okay, you're looking.
So we're
we want to be able
looking
to throw some sound bites in.
So it wasn't a complete fail.
Because the other thing I would like to do is I'd like to put our own little edit on some lyrics that can be scouting friendly.
Oh yeah, that'd be nice.
Because Biz Markie, instead of just a friend, I would like to change it to just a guy.
Just a guy.
Yeah. Say he's just a guy.
Yeah. Just a guy. Another guy.
Because that's like when we do Case Keenum talk, I want to be able to drop
he's
that
just
in.
The guy. Yeah.
All right, Sully, that's your assignment.
All right, that's it.
All right, that's going to do it for us today. Fun episode. We got lots of video content you guys can check out on YouTube, as well as more audio coming your way in a couple days. This is Move the Sticks, DJ Bucky. We'll see you next time.
Yep.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to nfl.com/podcasts.